Hello.
Hello.
I don't hear myself at all.
The Yak Babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, the only podcast on the internet sponsored by El Rancho Pupo Mucho Excremento. My name is Aaron. I'm here with my personal pals, Dave.
Good to see you, babies.
And Brick.
When do we lock down the Rancho Pupo?
Recently, this morning. This isn't a poop podcast, at least not yet. And so we're talking about books. And our topic today is, this came because of a tweet that our tweet thread that I got all cranky about. This happens from time to time on Twitter. You'll see this tweet. It's some variation of this. This one was some guy named Kirk Moore who says, "What classic," in quotes, "classic book were you to read in high school that you despise to this day? Dream and were you required or whatever? Or did you have to read in high school?" And the threads or the responses sort of offer a litany of other texts of books that people didn't like. And it's a lot of the usual suspects, like Great Gatsby shows appear quite a bit, and Of Mice and Men, and Lord of the Fly. Lord of the Fries is a porno I made. Heart of Darkness.
You went to porno?
Yeah. Well, because I would imagine it would be one of those pornos where you eat a lot of food.
Oh, one of those.
Yeah. Like a feeder porno.
That's a thing?
Yeah, I bet.
I bet it's got this very specific name. Yeah.
I don't have the Google terms for it, but I'm sure it's out there.
I think you just called it a feeder porno.
Yeah, well, get searching.
Probably don't.
Tune in for our next episode about feeder pornos. So these kind of threads always make me cranky. And so I sent the thread to the personal pals in a text, and I was like, literally, this is dumb shit. And it's happened before. This is not the first time I've encountered this thing. It happens over and over. And every time I come across it, it's always retweeted by some schmuck. And I see it, and I read through and get cranky. And I wanted to process why it makes me angry with you folks. Maybe
we should explore why you keep, like, you know you're going to hate these threads, but you keep, it's like self-torture.
Yeah, well, there's definitely a masochistic.
Yeah.
And I keep reading them past the point of satisfaction of that, like I scratch that itch and I just keep going to, like, there's going to be more, which is like a general internet problem, and, you know, overall. So when you read those threads, like, do you react the same way that I do? Do you get cranky, or is it sort of like roll off your back, or what is your reaction to someone saying that a book that they read in high school sucks?
I guess I don't read them.
Okay.
Like, I didn't even really scroll through
okay. The
one you sent.
Yeah.
Because I kind of, like, I could fill in the blanks.
Right. So do you feel like that's more, like, if someone you knew was like, "Oh man, I really hated reading Frankenstein in high school," for instance, like, would you be like, "Oh, okay, whatever." Or would that, like, rankle you in some way?
I would immediately make them read it again.
Yeah, you definitely would, yeah.
Well, I guess that's maybe a bad example for this group because it's a very specific book for us. Like, let's say, I don't know, Billy Budd.
Well, I think they're...
Is that a book people read in high school?
Yeah, I think so.
Really, huh?
It's definitely, I think, a reading list book for sure.
It might rankle me. You know, it's unlikely to rankle me, but, you know, if their reasoning for saying this, which I think is the kind of the point that you're talking about here, right? The reason for these responses is what got you, not the actual. Like, if someone is looking back and saying, "Yeah, I didn't really like Jane Eyre in high school,"
yeah,
because I just didn't like the book, then whatever. But
yeah, and absolutely. So part of the problem for me is that I'm fine with criticizing the canon and you know, finding sort of faults with that. I'm totally on board with all of that. But often the criticism seems to be this, like, manufacturing of a progressive mindset in the past, or they're trying to, like, pretend that as a 15-year-old you were aware of the deeper issues with, I don't know, Jane Eyre or whatever, and now are finally have the voice to say what you thought was wrong all along. It's like, no, I think that most kids probably just don't read it because they didn't want to read it because they were their high school kids. And that kind of posturing crinkles me.
How many of those people, one, read the book at all?
Well, yeah.
And two, read it since high school?
Well, I think that the latter especially is true. I don't think that a lot of people are reading these books. And like Dave and I were talking about earlier, when I read Jane Eyre in middle school, I didn't love it, but I read the whole thing.
It's not a middle school book.
Well, it's middle school level. It's not that complicated.
The words aren't the...
Right. There's more to it than the middle school would probably get out of it, right?
Right. I guess that's what I'm saying. But then a lot of people, then it just, their impression of that book is whatever their middle school reading was. Unless they're getting into, you know, early modern literature. They're not, most people are not re-examining Jane Eyre.
Right.
They learned the themes were in eighth grade, because that's about the ceiling of the complexity of that discussion in eighth or ninth grade.
Right. Well, Dave and I both had the experience of reading it in middle school and not liking it, and then reading it in college and really liking it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so really deeply appreciating that novel in ways that I hadn't before. But that makes sense. I was older. I had studied literature more. I knew more of what was going on. And I probably had a better teacher for it as well. I guess the idea of looking back at your high school reading and saying, oh, it was all bad, these books were all stupid, I should have been allowed to read whatever I wanted to read, negates the idea of the possibility of context and learning from them, which right. I think is maybe the problem. Or maybe not, I don't know.
What were, you listed some examples of responses from this thread, right? Like Lord Jim.
Yeah, let's see.
And people's reasons.
I think we have to remind ourselves right here that the day this episode goes up, we'll also retweet this thread, maybe, so people know what the hell we're talking about.
I don't know.
Or one.
I'll do like a screen cap, maybe.
One, yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah. Let's see. I hated the Scarlet Letter and all other Nathaniel Hawthorne shit. We were forced to read in AP English. And then some person says, AP, abject pain. Ha ha ha. Alyssa says, Beowulf was torturous. An unpopular opinion, but I really didn't like Catcher in the Rye. I would say that is a popular opinion. Every single like, Dickens. See, fuck that guy. Seriously.
I don't know. I don't have problem with that, I guess. Somebody just saying, I didn't like this book.
Yeah, that's fine. But someone saying, fuck Dickens, like, there just seems... It seems like trying to describe it as like someone trying to get up on the book, right? To be like, ah, I've mastered Dickens now. I know I can say, fuck, that guy is so stupid. It's like, there's probably more there than you. It's like a version of some kind of like mental superiority that I don't. There's no humility here, right? The humility is like, maybe I didn't understand this book, or maybe there's something more they didn't get at the time. Or
I think you're giving people way too much credit for the amount of thought they've put into both these books and those comments.
Well, I think that's my problem, is there's not a lot of thought going into these comments. Like, I wish there was more. I wish they were thinking. Yeah,
but I think there's even less than you think there is.
But I feel like we show superiority. Like, you know, we say similar. We'll say, like, fuck James Patterson. Obviously, I'm not comparing Dickens and Patterson, but is it about the levels here?
I guess that's a good point. There's like there's some kind of class thing here about literature is supposed to be good versus bad. This one says, Watership Down. The quizzes were just lists of rabbit names with a blank to list what they did in the science section. I'll never forgive those rabbits. And someone responds to that and says, I read the Wikipedia summary. That's a very bizarre story.
So, but I mean, that's it right there, right? So the problem is how they've been taught.
Yeah.
Right? So especially in the last, you know, since the 80s. Really, right? The late 80s, whenever that stupid thing that the Reagan administration put out that overhauled all of public schools.
Right.
It's plot, 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 plot until you're in 12th grade and then a little bit of analysis, right? And then there's been a push to build that back in, but it's particularly in English classes, it's so dependent on the teacher.
Yeah.
Right? You get a good teacher and that's the person that actually helps you peel back maybe another layer of the onion.
Yeah.
But the complexity of really most public school English literature work is plot.
Right.
Plot and like
symbolism.
Yeah, in the broad. There's no
like decoding symbols.
Right. And like, you know, you can't just expect 14-year-olds to be pulling apart Jane Eyre and actually digging into social complexities and stuff because they're not there and they don't have the context for it. Like, I get that. But we've dumbed it down too much as a society, right? Where like really right. It is like, what's the plot of the, who gives a fuck about what the different rabbits are in right. Watership Down, right? Right? That's not the point. But you need to get to those things in order to get to what's underneath.
Right.
And all that stuff's been pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. Like, Jane Eyre is not an eighth grade book, and it right. hasn't been for a long time. And that's not because eighth grade brains can't handle it. It's because the way we used to teach kids back in the day, they were ready for those kind of conversations, and it's all slowed down.
Well, and I think you had Jane Eyre on the mind specifically because of somebody on this thread talking about how it's not as much of a feminist text as we want to.
Yeah, here's
want to believe it is or something without thinking about, like you said, the context. Like that book was written in what, like the 1840s,
1850 something, right?
I don't know.
1845 ish.
Here's a exchange about Jane Eyre. So one person says, Jane Eyre, I cannot stress how much I hate that book. Someone responds, yes, both that and Wuthering Heights, that family, the Brontes, can be dropped from the classics list entirely. Someone else says, Wuthering Heights is the worst. Someone else says, y'all are crazy. Jane is the best. The Moors, man, the Moors. I lit. Took a That's bike trip. No, it's not.
Okay.
To England to see the Moors because of Jane. Oh, literally, I see. It's just an abbreviation. I hate Twitter. The person who said they should be dropped says this instead. Rochester is an abusive, creepy, manipulative trash fire. He should have died with his actual wife. St. John is also the goddamn worst. All the men in that story are garbage. Neither sister was capable of writing men who shouldn't be thrown into an old well immediately. Someone says Mr. Rochester and his story are far less interesting than Jane herself, but sadly he seems to get the majority of the focus in the middle section of the book. Frowny face. I thoroughly enjoyed the first 100-ish pages, though, and started to get really really get back into it again at the very end. As it continues, there's a lot of really interesting themes towards the start, like Jane's treatment of affecting her perception of art, and Helen's death is really impactful. I guess Jane finding love on her own terms would have been incredibly empowering to women in the 19th century. Rachel Pearson responds, if the book had no men in it, no creepy romance, if it was just Jane surviving the world, I might have enjoyed it, or at least not hated it more each time I read it. But that's not what the awful author chose to do, and the novel's an epic trash fire failure as a result. Sadly, I think marriage was so ingrained in the lives of women that they have Jane rejected altogether would have earned Bronte a crazy amount of criticism. Mr. Rochester is a terrible person, and no one in their right mind would want to marry him, but I think this free-spirited nature would have provided a kind of escape for readers who felt confined to the area's strict social traditions. So that person has some more context here. The person who's like, all the men are bad, and if it was just about Jane surviving the world on her own, I would have enjoyed it. That's such a dumb comment, right? I feel like that's the essence of this sort of thinking is, well, if we rewrite the novel entirely, then it would be great. If it was something that wasn't what it is, like, as opposed to looking at it for what it is and in the context of when it was written, that seems like such a failure of imagination.
Right, and there's a very prevailing sentiment in all those comments, or almost all of them, that whatever the thing is needs to be taken at face value.
Right, exactly. Right? Exactly.
And that's not how books work.
Yeah, and we've had this discussion before, too, about characters that we don't like, that they're supposed to be that way in some ways. Like, sometimes a character you don't like because they're written poorly and that's just a bad character, and the novel wants you to like them and you can't. But sometimes a character is unlikable because the novel wants you to not like the character, and that's part of the sort of feeling of the story. So I think maybe that's it. Maybe I think you're right. There's this sense of, like, there's missing context here, and that the respondents are treating these novels as diary entries of real lives as opposed to, like, fiction, which is what they are. So we also were talking about sort of reading lists in general in this kind of same conversation about what high school reading lists and middle school reading lists should be in the first place. I think that the break your right part of the problem here is that a lot of these books are presented, like I said, without context, or they just don't quite have the same resonance for middle school or high school readers as they did in the past, maybe without the sort of same preparation or training for it. Are there things that you would take off the sort of high school reading list canon, or things you would add to it, or what would you do with these high school reading lists?
I think the canon needs to be adjusted for varying reasons, but I still think the problem is standardization of
making it testable.
Yeah. Because what happens is, authorial intent really comes in eighth and ninth grade on the standards, right? Where that's something that needs to be hammered a lot sooner, right? And because everything needs to be building blocked, right? Like, obviously you need to learn plot before you can learn theme, and then you need to learn rising at, like, you know, the
right
when it's kind of put in that order, it kicks everything down the road,
right?
There's no reason why kindergartners can't be asked to examine things better, right? And I wonder how much of it has to do, and I'm kind of changing gears with the actual book selection, when it has to do with just competitions for attention nowadays versus, how many kids are going to like Jane Eyre?
Right.
And how many kids liked Jane Eyre in 1975 but read it anyway?
Well, yeah, or 1996 for that matter. Like, right. I feel like I read Jane Eyre not liking it, but I read the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I wrote the report about it like I was supposed to. And then there are books that I read that I liked more and liked less, too. So there's a spectrum of sort of appreciation there.
Yeah, I still hate Great Gatsby, but I read it.
Sure, right. If you could add, or what would your alteration to, like, a high school reading list be? What would you, if you could sort of futz with it, what would a change that you would want to make be?
I would recognize better that stuff written 100 to 200 years ago, largely in England, needs less prevalence.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. So, and I think there's a movement that way, but it's still like you read three British classics and then Chinua Achebe, right? And so it's kind of shoehorned in.
Right.
It really needs to be turned almost the other way around. There's a lot to take apart in books like Jane Eyre.
Right.
Right. But you shouldn't start there.
Right.
I think there's, the sooner schools build in different voices and different styles and different worldviews and intents, the more tool sets people have to be open-minded about things. Whether you like Jane Eyre or not is not the point, right? It doesn't matter if you like the books you read,
right?
That's, I finish lots of books I don't like, and there's value in that,
right?
So, I mean, that's what I would do. I would reshuffle how things are. And I do think most teachers try to do that.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot more freedom now than there used to be as far as teachers choosing their reading lists and,
right,
working together in professional groups to be more thoughtful about what kind of schools are reading as groups and whatever else, to not just fall back on the old standards.
But, right. Do you think that you would prioritize or in some way try to sort of introduce more contemporary literature to reading lists for middle school and high school readers? I'm thinking back to my experiences in high school and middle school, and the most contemporary novel I read of all those years was Invisible Man, I think.
I was thinking that same book, yeah. When you started asking that question.
Yeah.
Yes, but I think
yeah.
it's much more contemporary now than when we were in high school. Like much more.
The reading list is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So you still have those to fall back on, but there, I mean, I'd say the majority of the books that are assigned, particularly through like summer reading and extra stuff, are relatively contemporary and built around more social justice kind of stuff. I think that's been successful. That's why I'm kind of, when I'm saying the problem is more the structure than the content, I think there's been movement towards allowing the changes in the voices and the types of books, but the structures of which people are taught to engage with them hasn't changed, not gotcha. Drastically enough. But also, you know, when I was teaching some pretty limited kids, one of the most popular books I taught was Of Mice and Men. They fucking loved that book. And when I brought out some books that were written in the last 10 years and kind of tried to do the sci-fi thing or the dystopian thing, you know, some kids really liked it and some just bounced off.
But right.
kids want to talk about racism. I mean, it's, right. it's really it, right?
They it was the Vaseline glove that got them, right?
Well, no, it was Cripps. Is that his name? Cripps?
Yeah.
Yeah, Cripps.
Right.
And that's why these things can be kind of frustrating, right? Because when you're forcing people to find, like, kids want to talk about the things that matter to them. They want to talk. They don't know how to, and they need help, and they need teachers to guide them there. But they want to talk about power imbalances. They want to talk about racism. They want to talk about poverty, right? They want to talk about emotional handicaps and sort of the sense of self versus a society that really doesn't give a fuck about them, right? These are things that, like, kids universally want to talk about. And these things are available in Jane Eyre.
And right? Dickens and all that
And
stuff,
Dickens
yeah.
and all those. But they're not front and center, right?
Gotcha.
Particularly if you're a 12-year-old black kid.
Right.
Right?
Well, also if you're being taught, if your teacher is telling you the most important thing to master here is the plot details.
Right.
And not letting you dig into the concept.
And, you know, and that's tough because if you don't have the tools to understand how plots work, it's very difficult to get into that conversation.
Right.
Right? So it's just, a lot of it is just, it happens too slowly.
Right.
And they're not equipped for the conversations they're being asked to have.
Right.
And that's kind of like a systemic failure.
Right. Dave, what about you? Would you change the high school reading list in a certain way? Is there something you would add or take away or modify?
I wonder. And there are probably schools who do this, but I was envisioning like a teacher choosing a list of like 25 books kind of spanning the spectrum and then letting the kids look into all those books, coming back the next day and like everyone picks his or her like the five they're most interested in. And then like the top five, you know, vote getters or whatever
right.
is what the class discusses.
Like democratic sort of like making it a poll.
Like allowing them to follow their interests, but still like, you know, and it requires the teacher to put a lot of thought into the 25
right.
books that he or she selects. But
right. yeah.
So I actually did that.
Giving them more freedom. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So one of the summer reading like sort of structures we did a few years ago was we came up with, it was like 30 books and we tiered them through difficulty and sort of not difficulty necessarily in language, but difficulty in sort of like, because we were doing World War II. So like the heavy Holocaust shit was on the top tier. So, and the deal was the kids got to keep the books that they finished. So there was a, like the bottom tier was like 10 or 12 books that were like pretty accessible and sort of covered generally what happened in World War II and different perspectives and whatever. And then if they finished that and they wanted the next one, then we had like Mouse and some more like complex graphic novel stuff. And then on the third tier was like Slaughterhouse 5 and whatever else. And kids could work their way up and earn rewards to get through them. And then they get to keep the books.
That's cool.
Yeah.
One last question here, just close this conversation out. I want to take that Twitter thread and do the inverse of it instead with you two. Are there books that you read in high school, middle school that you thought you really love, like your positive experiences with reading lists, and you can't say, we have to excerpt our usual answers. So Brick can't say Frankenstein, Dave, you can't say John Germain, I can't say Martian Chronicles.
But books we specifically read for classes?
Yeah, like reading list books, things that came to you as required for English lit or reading classes or whatever in your middle and high school years, classroom books that you read that you really enjoyed and look back on still fondly today.
I'm also going to excerpt Watership Down because that's my answer, but I talk about it too much.
Okay.
I guess I'm having trouble thinking. Like, I don't very well remember what I read in high school.
Okay.
Bartleby, maybe.
Yeah.
Though.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a great experience. I read that in high school, too.
My answer is Shakespeare. I'm not convinced that when I was teaching Shakespeare was one of my favorites, but that's because I liked it.
Right.
I'm not convinced how important it is for... I think Shakespeare should be taught, or they, however we want to do that one. But I don't think kids need to work their way through like four plays in high school like they do, you know?
Right.
But I was glad I did. So maybe I'm wrong on that one.
And what you said about sort of students want to talk about the things that matter to them, class and power differentials and so on, are those are also available in those Shakespeare plays too. So if they're approached the right way, then yeah, I think they should be taught.
Yeah, Shakespeare is more maybe than just about anything else really dependent on the teacher's ability to sell it.
Yeah. Maybe also performance too. Like maybe we should be teaching Shakespeare less as a reading exercise and more as a like a audience exercise, like watching something, right?
Yeah, or I mean, you read them aloud and do whatever else. There's a lot to be learned in taking Shakespeare apart, but I think most of the fruits of that come from wanting to, or like it's kind of hard to backdoor someone with Shakespeare, I guess is what I'm saying.
Right.
So many kids just check right out.
Right. Gotcha.
But for me, I wasn't all that interested in high school, and then it was one of those kind of Hamlet was the first one I read. It's like, oh, okay. Wait a minute. There's something to like spending some time on these.
Yeah.
You know, and how old was I? 15, 14, you know, and that's right. Like, that was pretty early for me to kind of have that sort of engagement with something that was not only so old, but so foreign from the kind of things I read.
Right.
So that's my answer.
I liked anything where you were able to read aloud in class too. I really got into that. We had like assigned parts.
Yep.
I always loved that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I would always volunteer to read. I'd be like the first one with my hand.
Yeah,
to
absolutely.
Like read a passage. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Similarly to Shakespeare, another one that I really loved was Beowulf.
Wow, interesting.
No.
Huh. I just skipped there. I had to read
still,
Beowulf.
Still popular.
Yeah.
But it's mostly because of the arm.
Right. I've got a bunch. One that I think of a lot is The Agony and Ecstasy by Irving Stone, that novel about Michelangelo. Did you read that?
No.
God, did you read that in high school?
High school. Yeah. Fucking love that book. It was so good. It probably does not hold up today. It probably is pretty cheesy, but man, it was a ripping story. I really loved it as a kid. But the one that I think about the most often is Steppenwolf by Hermann Hesse. Mm-hmm. And it was part of the AP literature reading list. And we had these assignments where we had to once every 6 weeks do like this big like report on a novel. And four of them were the class read them all together. So Invisible Man was one. And I think Death of a Salesman was another, and maybe there's two more, I can't remember now. And then you had two freebies. You could choose from the list whatever you wanted to read and do a report on it. And I chose Steppenwolf because my friend Dave Vile liked it.
It had nothing to do with the song.
The band? Yeah. 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 I just listened to Magic Carpet Ride for 3 hours and wrote a report on that.
That's their only song, right?
No, they also had Born to Be Wild.
Oh, yeah, that's the song I was saying.
They got a couple hits. But the novel was great. I really loved it. I was probably a bit too young, maybe, or it was, you know, a bit over my head for sure, but I really enjoyed the experience of reading it, and I was glad that I had that experience of reading it, which is very cool. Okay, well, let us know on Twitter, Yak Baby listeners, what your preferences for your reading lists were, books that you enjoyed. I don't want to hear about the books you didn't enjoy. I want to hear about books that you wanted to read or changes you would make to the reading list if that's what you want to offer. That'd be great. You can find us on Twitter at Yak Babies, and you can email us at yakbabiespodcast@gmail.com, right? I think. Yes, great. Also, subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/yakbabies. There's a lot of fun going on Patreon for $1 a month. Access to fun and games and a bunch of weird stuff that you don't hear in this feed because it's too gross. So if that intrigues you, then go there. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
Great Gatsby sucks.
God damn it.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all their loyal listeners and especially their patrons past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, and William Howard Taft. Oh.